most often it would happen at the stairwell at school. I'd be standing at the bottom of the stairs, and it was a stone staircase that went round in a sort of square spiral all the way up through the different floors of the school. And I'd look up it and I'd see how hard the surface was. There were stone steps, and how high it was. And I'd start to feel anxious, and my breathing would start to feel tight.
As I'd go on the stairs, I'd imagine myself either falling over the banisters and plunging down, or I'd imagine myself falling backwards and cracking my head on the corner of one of the stairs and then dying or having terrible brain damage. And it was so vivid, the image of myself falling backwards and the crack on the back of the head.
It was a multi-sensory image. I could see myself slowly falling back, and I could also feel all the emotions that you'd feel in that moment, or the terror, and my stomach would go. I would feel as if it were happening. This was me walking up the stairs. Just walking up the stairs. You know, they felt incredibly dangerous. Obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD, has been part of my life since I was a teenager. You might have heard people describe themselves as a bit OCD and thought that OCD is a personality trait, a liking for things being neat and just so, but that's inaccurate. OCD is actually an anxiety disorder, a very debilitating and serious one. People with it experience very negative, repetitive, intrusive thoughts. I've written about my experience of OCD before. I wrote a book about it a few years ago. But this is the first time I've attempted to write poetry about it. And around the corner, and there's a small space with my desk under a Velux window and a sloping ceiling. And it's very crowded in here. It's quite appropriate for writing about something that involves crowded thoughts and a messy brain, because it's full of books all stacked on top of each other, old pens and keyboard with dust on it, a whole load of papers I can't throw away because I am a bit of a hoarder. That is one form that my OCD takes. I get very anxious about throwing things away. And sometimes I sit down here and I look around and I think, this is like the inside of my head, this is so messy, and I want to just throw it all out. I have a nice minimalist clean head, which I could think nice minimalist clean thoughts. I've got one idea, which is to do something I haven't done before. And the thing I've thought of is that I want to write in the voice of the OCD. So I need to start paying attention to when I'm having these thoughts and say, what does that sound like? So here we go. Thought, pattern, pattern, thought. I have to sort of get up the energy to jump over it before I can start writing, and I have to trick it by just typing anything really, really fast, and something about the momentum and the rhythm of typing will sort of overpower this big inertia of the OCD going, someone's already said that, you can't say that, that's rubbish, what do you want to do that for, you should be saying that, if you say that you'll hurt someone, that's a ridiculous thing to say, I can think of three people who are going to object to that, that's an ugly sentence, can't put it that way. And it's partly just the inertia of moving from one state to another, which we all have, but also I do have to sort of jump over those prickly hedges of OCD thoughts, because it doesn't want me to write anything down in case it's upset someone or is stupid or is imperfect. One of the images I have for the OCD is a mechanical crab. It's made of steel and it taps around and you can hear it coming closer. You know, here comes the mechanical crab. Come in to get hold of your head and control it. The OCD isn't the thoughts themselves, it's the excessive attention you give to trying to stop them that then makes them bigger. It's like scratching a scab or an itch.
makes it worse. You've got to deal with this now.
I think I'm still in the stage where they're mobbing me a bit, because I mean, it's this massive sense of responsibility that often comes with OCD, and I feel a responsibility to you and to who commissioned this and to everyone who has OCD or knows someone who does and responds.
Wait, before you start, you know those poems of yours, the ones about your problems, those problems you think you have, those made-up problems that people with real problems won't have heard of, those problems you wrote that book about, that book that means you can't have that problem all that badly, because people who have it really badly can't write books about it. Those poems of yours, the ones that won't say anything you haven't said already, the ones that won't say anything another poet hasn't said already, the ones that sound too much like your other poems, the ones that sound too much like other people's poems, the ones that aren't enough like other people's poems to count as poems, the ones where the language is too flat to count as poem language, the ones that are easy to understand, which means they must have been too easy to write to count as poems. Those glib poems of yours, those slight, wry poems you write, those poems you write that are nothing but lists, that aren't really poems so much as symptoms, compulsive symptoms, those poems of yours with punchlines. Don't write any of those.
It does feel stuck, like I'm stuck, or, you know, stuck in some very sticky substance like a really sticky hedge, or like mud or quicksand. And I know that some days are just not going to be very good days, and I have to go, oh, well, turn the page, start again tomorrow.
So we're recording. I decided it was time to sit down and brainstorm, just write something. And I surprised myself because I thought I would write about the crab and the crab's voice. And the crab turned into something else. I am the mechanical face hugger. My claws are in your ears. I have many claws. Two are in your eyes. Now keep dead still, you, and listen. If you write about OCD, you will bring the worst up and make yourself ill. If you rat on me, I may not be here to protect you anymore. If you do not let me protect you, you will die. Without me inside, you will be empty. I'm just surprised by, maybe I shouldn't be, how much fear is still there and how much came out the minute I started tapping on the keyboard. And this parasite or alien or thing that wanted to eat me became this sort of twisted guardian angel, this thing that wanted to protect me. So I thought I was writing about a mechanical crab, but actually I'm writing about a misguided angel.
So I'm talking to my friend Karen today, and Karen and I have a lot in common. Karen's known me very well for a long time, haven't you? And you're intimate with my disorders.
Indeed, I am intimate with your disorders.
I had a real block about writing for this programme because I thought, how are they ever going to be good enough?
Mm. Yeah, they are. What you've produced so far, I think it's wonderful. But my opinion isn't going to matter because I'm not the voice on the inside of your head.
So that's an interesting one. Have you encountered the voice inside of my head? Have you seen me dealing with it? Are there times when you look at me and you think, that's Joanne wrestling with her OCD
again? Absolutely. And in fact, it's really interesting. One of the times that's most obvious is when you've given me something to read, which you fairly often do.
Yeah.
And I read it and I comment on it. And I can see you reworking both my comment and your work as I'm speaking. I can see you do it. Of course, I recognise it because it's very familiar to me because it's how I operate too. But, you know, I can actually see it working in you. It's fascinating.
So I've got a transparent head with all the workings visible.
You do. Well, to me you do. Perhaps to a neurotypical,
we've known each other for many, many years.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've known each other as women and mothers and writers.
Yes.
Earlier this week, I was going through a cache of notes I found that I made when my son was very small. And I can see before it was diagnosed all the OCD going on. So when he's about, I don't know, 6 weeks old, I put his helplessness appalls and overwhelms me. Terror of his being dropped, falling, being hit by a car gets smashed in my mind again and again. My little fragile boy. I didn't tell a doctor or the health visitor after my son was born that my fears of terrible accidents had all moved to him. I know accidents that would be my fault in some way. That the really hardest thoughts were the ones I didn't want to harm him, but the thought that, what if I suddenly have a mad impulse and do this? And because you think that, there's an image in your head of you doing it, which is incredibly distressing. And of course, I didn't tell them about that because I thought it made me a dangerous mother. But when I did finally tell them, they said, we knew there was something you were holding back, but that it was actually OCD. They didn't know and I didn't know. I mean, I think I was at my least mentally well when I was pregnant. Mm. I have to say, I was scared of knives. I've always been a bit scared of knives. I was especially scared of them when my son was small for the same reason.
Yeah.
And I still can't stop myself from, it's a real OCD thing. When I pick up a really big knife, I put my finger over the end of the blade, over the point, and I carry it across with my finger on the point so that it won't accidentally, of its own volition, somehow stab anyone present.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got loads of things like that. I mean, people always think about the big important things with anxiety, don't they? But actually, it's the accumulation of small things.
Yeah.
That's what grinds you down with it, I think. Yeah.
Before my husband and I knew that I had OCD and I worried, we used to call it my what-if-ing.
What if?
What if this happens? What if that happens? I think at its worst, it was happening a lot during the day because I was very triggered when my son was tiny. I loved him. I loved being close to him. But the world seemed full of things that could harm him or kill him. So if I went to a lunch with other mums and we were over a stone floor, if we were eating somewhere with a stone floor, I would just spend the whole time thinking, stone floor, cracked his head on the floor. You know, I would try and talk and I would try and eat, but I was just thinking, stone floor. And I would be so glad when it was over.
Mummy's and Daddy's first book of what ifs. What if I'm not holding them right? What if I hold them wrong and their neck breaks? What if I hold them wrong and smother them and they stop breathing? What if I can't feed them properly? What if I eat or drink the wrong thing and it gets in my milk and they get ill? What if I can't breastfeed and they don't get the antibodies and they get ill? What if I prepare the formula wrongly and they take it and they get ill? What if I put them down in the wrong position and they stop breathing? What if I fall asleep with them on the sofa and smother them and they stop breathing? What if I let them get overheated and they stop breathing? What if I let them get too cold and they stop breathing? What if I drop them? What if I fall when I'm holding them? What if I fall down the stairs when I'm holding them? What if I fail to stop them falling out of the pram? What if I accidentally let go of the pram and it rolls downhill and into the road? What if I fall while I'm holding something sharp and it goes into them? What if I accidentally drown them in the bath? What if I turn out to be someone who drowns their baby in the bath? What if I turn out to be someone who throws their baby out of the window? What if I turn out to be someone who pushes the pram in the path of a bus? What if I turn out to be someone who hurts their baby with a sharp thing? What if I turn out to be a paedophile? What if I tell someone about these thoughts I'm having? What if I tell them and then they think I'm a monster? What if they take the baby away?
It's like someone coming up to your face or in your head and shouting at you and drowning everything else out and almost deafening you, and it's overwhelming, and all you want to do is make that horrible noise stop. You do the compulsion or the rumination or the avoidance or the seeking reassurance or whatever it is you do to try and throw a blanket over it and
muffle it and shut it up, and stop it from persecuting you.
When your head is filled with an OCD thought and OCD feelings, you're detached from reality and all you can see is this terrible vision in your head that seems to take over the whole world.
It works the way worrying works. It's kind of worrying gone mad, because you think, well, I have to think through all these thoughts, because if I haven't let all these thoughts in and give them proper attention and thought them through and answered them in the constant risk assessment that is my brain activity, then I'll be to blame when something goes wrong, which it will go wrong, because I haven't anticipated every single possible outcome. I was thinking about, I suppose your OCD uses poetic techniques. It uses hyperbole, it makes things big. It has a lot of narrative. It makes these little sad, dangerous stories.
Terrible thoughts go round
your head.
And it uses repetition.
Often, actually, I can't write without moving. So, you know, I'll get up and I'll go for a walk, because there's something about moving myself that seems to move my thoughts. So I'll get up and walk down this road between mine and the parallel road. This would have really bothered me before, walking between parked cars. Before my son was born, around about 2000-2001, I started getting really anxious about crossing roads. I was doing a PhD at that point, which I then gave up, partly because of the travel anxiety getting from where I was to the university, because that got really bad. I don't know what it was about that time in my life that made me crunch like that. Now we get onto the main road. This is the sort of road where I couldn't go with my son. Because you get great big lorries like that, and the pavements were just never wide enough to reassure me. I mean, you can feel the weight of them and the momentum of them. And there was this little baby, and there were these hard pavements and these cars and all these just loud, hard forces shearing past all the time that could hit him and harm him.
Angel of the curbside. Sorry, excuse me, sorry. Mother with the buggy with the baby of soft flesh, baby of slight bones, baby who has your heart, baby who draws your fears, crashing fears, crushing fears, head cracking on the bonnet fears, bones crunching under tyres fears, fears with wheels on, fears with windscreens, fears with kilogram metres per second, ton weight fears, headlight dazzle fears, Doppler waveform fears, siren fears, grieving mummy empty buggy fears, taking down the cot fears, sighing fears, softly crying fears, fading into silence, fears. Sorry for your fears. Excuse us, fears. Excuse us. Safe to cross now. Sorry.
We run those lists, these checklists, things to be anxious about, things to tick off as safe, things to tick off as extra dangerous. And that is exactly how this feels, you know?
So, it's the 19th of March and coronavirus has happened and we're all social distancing and some of us are self-isolating, and we've got instructions to take care and avoid places and wash our hands a lot. OCD is not about washing hands. Can't be repeated often enough. In some people it takes the form of germ phobia, and that makes them wash their hands or not, but it's the intrusive thought, the form of that intrusive thought, and the compulsive nature of the action that makes it OCD. I think what we now have is a very anxiety-producing environment. Obviously, at a time like this, being careful and checking things and washing things isn't dysfunctional. It's what you're supposed to do. But at the same time, I knew that this would put huge pressure
on those of us who have a tendency towards OCD or tendency towards any kind of anxiety. I wanted in this to look at the way in which official announcements, all these coronavirus information films, messages from the government we're getting, seem like an OCD nagging voice that has the same sort of structure. But yes, strange times, and they call for strange poems.
Broadcast from the Angels. In this unprecedented emergency, it is more important than ever to keep yourselves and your loved ones safe. It is more important than ever to be sure. At the same time, it is harder than ever to be safe, harder than ever to be sure. So remember to do the following. Check your breathing, your temperature, your loved one's breathing, their temperature. Think over everyone you encountered last week. Were any of them coughing? Did you keep at all times exactly 2 meters apart? Note every time you touch a surface. Keep track of every time you wipe it, and for how long, and what you wipe it with. Count your tins of chopped tomato, your rolls of toilet paper, your packets of paracetamol. Reassure yourself that you have enough. Ask other members of your household to reassure you that you have enough. Reread all government guidance. Question whether you have followed it sufficiently closely. Enumerate all the ways in which you might be responsible for infecting someone, for using up scarce resources, for lowering general morale. Follow these instructions for at least 20 minutes, 20 times a day. And remember, stay uncertain, feed the angels, shrink lives.
I've been on some kind of medication now for decades, on and off, mostly on. Once you've gone past that threshold of taking medication, it's not the same for anyone. Some people, it's not right for them. But I'm just so used to it, I just take it every morning. And the way I explain it, it doesn't make the OCD go away, but it's like it's shouting from a dungeon in the basement rather than right in your face, shouting in your face. So it's held in abeyance, if that's the right word. I had some behavioural sessions where my son was small, tried crossing roads with him. Once you have crossed the road enough times and not been hit, the anxiety does start to be extinguished. But you need to experience it first, and that's really difficult because quite often the treatment involves going into exactly those situations that you don't want to go in and staying in those situations that your brain is telling you to leave immediately. So it's really uncomfortable. It's hard work.
I don't think the war ends, but I think you can win a battle.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes an important battle.
Yes.
You know.
There are just things like being able to name it. Once you can name it, you can tell it to go away. I mean, it might not go completely away. It might just go to the other end of the room or the football pitch or train platform. But once you're aware of it, it loses some of its power. It's when you think that it's telling you the truth, that it cares about you, that it has you in its grip.
Those traces of OCD that remain even after you've had treatment that helps, that there's always a bit of you that's aware of it, that it always wants to come back and it always wants to take over. And you can just hear it whispering in the distance.
We're coming into the local park, which I like to walk across. And it's just got a nice chilled out feel to it. And I can walk past the play area and think all these scary thoughts I used to have about my son on the play equipment when he was smaller. That he'd fall off something or get hit by someone else on a swing. Each thought was like a genius Loki and it lives in a certain place. the place that triggered it, and when you walk past it, it gives you a little wave. It says, hello, remember me? Remember the fun we used to have when your child was small? Back at the crossing again. Oh, there's a car coming towards me, but I'm okay. I feel just incredibly grateful, a sense of freedom. It's like if you break a limb and then you get it back again, you really appreciate it. I really appreciate the fact that I can cross a road in less than optimal circumstances, for want of a better word, and I feel grateful every time. It's like being freed from something. It's like being untied out of the prickly hedge. And I don't take it for granted.
The angel as old bad friend. Hi, ghost from your past here. It's been such a long time, but I still think about you once a week. Or maybe twice a day. I think you know that. I think you can feel it too, in little ways. A tiny qualm before you cross a road, a hesitation at the gate. Is that front door really closed? I still remember those long night talks we had, going over all the daily nearly accidents. We were so close, weren't we? More than close. Inseparable. I know we've drifted, and I know why. I don't like that therapist you saw. I still don't like those pills you take. And now your son is so much bigger, I guess there's less to talk about. But I thought I'd just remind you, knowing me once is knowing me forever. There'll always be a bit of you that's mine. And remember too, I said I wished you safe. I never said I wished you well.